Good afternoon, and thank you once again for joining us today on The Browsers. We're all looking for some understanding when it comes to the Charleston shooting, and most of that understanding is focused on hatred, race, bigotry, those types of things. I happen to believe this is a man who suffers from severe mental illness, and that may be from prolonged drug abuse, lack of social interaction, and that this individual latched on in their poor mental health to an ideology that led him in this direction. We've seen similar shootings happen without the race component. But I do believe that it was a combination of the two, a message of hate, of racism, combined with severe mental illness. And the question is, are there other organizations out there who bear some responsibility in training, encouraging, or supporting the behavior of this shooter? That is a question that is being asked widely today, especially as we got a hold of his manifesto and saw certain organizations quoted in that manifesto.
Well, and one of them was a Missouri-based group called the Council of Conservative Citizens. So in this manifesto purportedly written by this suspect, he says that he went to their website and learned about brutal black-on-white murders from this group's website. And that was part of why he felt he needed to do what he did last week. We do have Jared Taylor on the line with us live. He is a spokesperson for the Council of Conservative Citizens. And Jared, I'm just looking at your website and quoting from your website. I understand that your group unequivocally condemns what happened, what Roof did. But, however, you point out that you feel that there is a danger in denying the extent of black on white crime that is out there. And I know that is a big part of your website. Why does your organization feel that it's so important for everyone to be aware of crimes committed against white people by black people?
Because the dominant narrative on race relations in the United States is that it goes in completely the other direction. All we hear about is lynching and slavery and segregation, and you would get the impression that if there's racial violence in the United States, it's whites attacking blacks. That's, in fact, not at all the case. Of the 500,000 or so criminal acts of violence that involve blacks or blacks and whites, 80 to 85% of them are committed by blacks against whites. It's important to have some sort of understanding of reality if we're going to set social policy.
So you don't believe the media reports on crimes against white people by black people and that it's your responsibility?
The media report on it, but they never talk about a generalized problem. When have you ever heard the statistic I just cited to you, that of all the crimes involving violent crimes involving blacks and whites that happen every year, 80 to 85% are committed by blacks against whites? People are astonished when they hear this. This should be something that is discussed. I think that in the case of Dylann Roof, I agree with your commenter so far that he was mentally unbalanced. It's very difficult to know what motivated him, drugs, insanity, who knows. But it might have been the case that if he thought that black-on-white crime was something that was recognized, something that was known to be a problem, and that society was trying to get to the root of this and trying to figure out how to stop this, perhaps he might not have felt compelled to do what he did.
It sounds a little bit like you're justifying what he did, although you say on your website you do condemn it.
Of course we condemn it. But you can agree with someone's analysis of a situation and completely disagree with what he himself did. If, for example, you are very convinced that global warming is a problem, and you've looked into this question very carefully, and you have carefully considered views, and then someone who agrees with you 100% goes into ExxonMobil and shoots up management, do you suddenly say, oh my gosh, I must have been wrong? No, you don't say that. You say, this guy should never have done that. But you can understand his motives.
I'm curious, what do you feel is the end game here? Let's say everyone starts acknowledging what you're asking them to acknowledge. What is that conversation you wanted to have? What is that legislation you want to have? as opposed to just saying, why aren't we just focusing on all crime, black on white, white on black, irrespective of race?
That would be fine, too. But instead, what is going to happen is the worst possible thing. We are going to get a ratcheting up and a repetition of this attempt to make white people feel guilty about the past, guilty about slavery, guilty about segregation, guilty about lynching. For a young white man like Dylann Roof, who had no hand in building the society in which we live, to be constantly told about the sins of his white ancestors, for some people in his age, it's going to get them on their knees begging for forgiveness. But for others, it'll make them hopping mad. I think this constant repetition of the idea that race relations is a one-way street, that whites are guilty, whites are responsible, and whites must transform themselves if there's any progress to be made, that is a very, very dangerous message to be sending, especially to young whites like him.
Well, I have to say, I completely disagree with your assessment. I grew up in this country. I learned the history of this country. Along the way, I learned about those white people who were always involved in the cause for civil rights, who fought alongside, who passed legislation, who did those things alongside. I've never once felt that I was supposed to bear some accountability or responsibility, but that I should be aware of the past because the past is very important, and that we should not repeat that past. So if he misinterprets that message, I don't necessarily believe with the assessment that that is the fault of teaching the history of this nation.
It's not simply a matter of teaching the history of this nation. As you probably know, now the approach is to say that all white people are the undeserving beneficiaries of white privilege.
That is the approach of some. It is not the approach of the majority, and you're acting like it is the statement of the majority. It's not.
Oh, that is increasingly the case.
No, I believe you're latching on to one message and assigning it to the whole, and that's the problem with both sides of the equation. When we just hear one small minority of statements being made, assign it to everybody, and then react accordingly.
I'm not assigning it to everyone, but the whole idea in the United States, how often have you heard people say, look, black people have got to shape up. Black people have got to stop having illegitimate children. Black people have got to get off welfare. They've got to get jobs, stop committing crimes. It's a two-way street. You almost never hear about that. And that leads to huge frustration among many whites.
Well, I do believe that we hear it on both sides. But I do have to ask you this before we go, Mr. Taylor. A lot of talk lately about the donations by your organization and by your president to different politicians. One of those politicians was one of ours here in Utah, Representative Mia Love. And on your website, once again, this is a quote from your website, that you oppose all efforts to mix the races, you oppose affirmative action. I was confused by this because Mia Love is a black woman, and was there any thought, what was the thinking behind donating to a black woman? It seems in contrary to what I see on your website.
Well, first of all donations are by individuals. The organization is a tax-exempt educational organization that's prevented by law.
Yeah, this was by your president, I believe.
Yes, that's right. This is a particular, an absolute individual matter. I can't speak for him. I hadn't known that he'd even made those contributions. So I don't know what his thinking on that was. I think that it is a legitimate point to say that if any group of people, white, black, or Asians, prefer the company of people like themselves and wish to establish communities in which they are the consistent majority, they should have the right to do so. Whereas if whites ever speak in those terms, they're considered hate mongers, whereas all they're doing is expressing a preference for people like themselves.
So you don't support any sort of legislation to that end? That's just the statement of your organization.
Yes, it's just a matter of complete freedom of association. And if white people say, I prefer to live in a white-majority area, or if they say, I preferred the United States the way it was before third-world immigration, namely a majority-white nation, they should not be ridiculed and demonized for saying so. I think many whites feel that way, but they don't dare say so.
Oh, I think that just like you have the right to say that, they have the right to demonize you. I mean, freedom of speech is freedom from government retribution, but it's not freedom from ridicule. It's not freedom from people thinking that you have an archaic, racist, bigoted viewpoint, and that in this country we've moved beyond that. They equally have a right to fight for a nation where they don't want that, where they don't like the past, where they can change it. And you seem to believe that you ought to be able to say it without any public retribution, and that somehow the people that contradict what you're saying are going against the fabric of this country.
What you're saying really just is reduced to name-calling. You're calling me a racist. You're calling me a bigot.
No, I'm saying...
Calling people names... Hold on, Jill, let me finish. Yeah. Calling people names is the most graceless way of admitting you've lost the argument. What is wrong with a white person wishing to remain living in a white-majority country? What is wrong with that?
Because you would miss out on being a friend with someone like me who isn't purely European, but I'm delightful and charming.
I'm sure you are. But if you were to suggest to Japan, for example, or China, that they would improve their country drastically by importing millions of Pakistani and Haitians and Guatemalans, they'd send for the men in the white coats. They know very well that they have a society of a particular tenor, of a particular quality, and they want to preserve it. And I say, God bless.
Well, I just want to go back to your idea of name-calling. Name-calling to me is calling somebody an idiot, calling somebody dumb, calling them stupid. The term racism and bigot, they have specific meanings. They are definable in the dictionary, and they are people who express opinions like you're expressing, that you want to be in a society of all white people. That's not name-calling. That is an assignment like conservative, like Republican, things like that. It's not reducing the discussion to the lowest level. It's assigning a definition to what you're saying.
Then, first of all, a racist is presumably someone who hates other people, and a bigot is someone with a closed mind. But would you say that an Israeli who wishes Israel to remain majority Jewish, is that a bigoted and a racist thing to think also? Because the equivalent, I think, is a perfect parallel between those who wish the United States had remained majority European. Hello?
No, I'm there. I'm just, I'm processing what you say. You keep wanting to jump outside of this country to use the actions of other people. I live in a country where I want all races. I want to stop looking at people according to race. I think that people who do look at people according to race and think that their life would be better off without those races involved, that it's archaic thinking.
All right, Jay, I'm going to let Mr. Taylor go because we're going to move on here. Jared Taylor is a spokesperson with the Council of Conservative Citizens. I think that our commentary has spoken for itself today. We'll let you digest what just happened on the browsers, and we'll be back in a minute.